Okay, we're starting up on Pei Tera Mebet at the bottom with the new Mishnah. Shnei Gitinu Shtei Ketubot. Gove Shtei Ketubot. Let's say, now we're going to have a bunch of cases where the woman gets married, then divorced, then remarried to the same guy. And now she goes after, you know, could be, right, in this case it's going to be after her second, then she gets divorced from him again. Okay, so she's got two divorces from the same guy, and she has two ketubot to show for it. Okay, because for whatever reason, she didn't demand her second ketubah. Maybe he didn't get around to paying it before they got remarried. And then he writes her a new ketubah for the second marriage. Okay? We'll see that he doesn't have to do that. But if he did do it, like let's say she said, I'll remarry you on the condition that I still get to keep my old ketubah, and you write me a new ketubah. Okay? Because generally, what would you assume? That we just roll over the first ketubah for the second time they get married. But in this case, apparently she didn't. So she comes to the court with two ketubahs and said, look, I have two gets from my husband and I have a ketubah. And obviously the dates have to match up, right? That the second ketubah's date has to be after the first, the second ketubah's gate has to be after the first get was given, right? Because if it was before the first get, then it would be clear that one ketubah was written on the other ketubah, right? We had a case like that way back. We'll see this again, that sometimes people would write a second ketubah on the same marriage just to either add something, right? There was even a siflo dekel or something, right? A siflo dekel and things like that. So anyway, here, if the dates match, then she can actually demand both ketubahs. Shtei ketubah beget echad. Let's say she only has one document of a get to show for it and two ketubahs. O ketubah b'shnei gitin, or she has two gets but only one ketubah. O ketubah beget umita. Okay, she has a ketubah, she has a get, and then she has his death to prove, okay? Eina gove ela ketubah achat. In all these cases, we only allow her to take one ketubah, because the assumption is, right, if she has take ketubot and get achad, then we have no idea that they were remarried, right, that she would have had a second ketubah. Ketubah and shnei gitin, so we only have one ketubah. The assumption is he rolled over the first ketubah for the second marriage. And the same thing with the ketubah get and mita. Right, that the ketubah was rolled over to the second time they got married, before he died then. Then she can only demand one ketubah. Shema gareshet ishto v'chzira. This is like saying generally what people would do. Amina ketubah harishona machzira. When he remarries her, he usually does it, you know, saying, okay, well, this is dependent on our first ketubah. Okay, that's the assumption. He would roll over the ketubah, and therefore, unless she actually has two gitin and two ketubot, it wouldn't work. Okay. Ibai b'hai gavya, ibai b'hai gavya. Now they're saying, well, if she has, it seems to imply, let's say the shtei ketubot beget echad, where she can only demand one ketubah. The Mishnah doesn't say she can only demand from one in particular, right? It sounds like if she wants, she can take from the first, and if she wants, she can take from the second. So the Gemara now is going to say, if that's the assumption, which it sounds like, she can demand from either which one she wants, pick and choose, lema tavit yufta de Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel. This creates a problem for Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel. Why? De Amar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel, shnei shtarot hayotzim b'zeh achar zeh, we saw this before, b'tel sheni et harishon. The assumption is if you have two ketubot, and the second one cancels out the first one, which would mean what, by the way? That if she had shibud nechasim from the first ketubah, she can't, right? Any property that he sold, right? So she gets a ketubah in, you know, 2010, and then she gets a ketubah in 2015 after they get remarried, you know, or whatever reason, there would be two ketubahs. So now she cannot demand land from 2010 because the second ketubah overrides the first. So the assumption here from the Mishnah, since it doesn't say which one she's going to collect from, it seems to imply she'd collect from either which one, and it goes against her. Rav Nachman said in the name of Shmuel that the 2015 ketubah overrides, it's mevatel, the 2010 ketubah, and she can only demand from karka that was sold from him from 2015 and not from 2010. So it would seem to imply that our Mishnah disagrees with that. And then they say, wait, but lav itmar alam, was it not said on what Rav Nachman said, that the second one cancels the first one? That Amar Rav Papa, the Rav Papa says about this, umoda Rav Nachman, di osif be dikla, here's our dekel that I reminded you a minute ago, that if we're at the very bottom of Pei Tera Mebet, that if you would be mosif a dekel, litosefet katve, hachanami bida osifla, then no, you could say that our Mishnah, when it said that if there's shtei ketubot and one get, and she can only demand from one ketubah, she can pick any which one she wants, and why can't she pick any which one she wants? Even Rav Nachman would agree that if in the 2015 ketubah he added one dekel, let's say, one additional thing, then what do we say? That he's just adding on to the first, he's not canceling the shibud of the first. It's just adding on to it, in which case she can demand from the 2015 one if she wants, but from 2010, really. Okay?
It's inclusive.
And they work together. What?
That it's inclusive.
Right, exactly. It's inclusive of the previous. Okay? Obviously, if he says in both of them, Matayim Zuz and the Tosefet of Omea Zuz, let's say, and then in the second one he adds a dekel, it doesn't mean she gets 600 Zuz, right? It means you get your basic 300 Zuz that I promised you in the earlier one, plus you get this dekel. Okay? Tana Rabbanan, Hotzia get uktuba umita. In get kodem la ktuba, gove shtei ktubot. Ktuba kodemet leget, eina gove ela ktuba achat, shamagaresh tishto v'chzira, amana ktuba v'shona achzira. So what does this mean? If she pulls out a get in the court, and she has a ktuba, and she has a death certificate, let's say, right, or evidence that he died, if the date of the get is before the ktuba, what did we learn in the previous mission? We didn't learn this together, but I don't remember if it was one Mishnah ago or right, it must have been the previous Mishnah, that if she has a get, remember, because a ketubah is a tnai beitin, she can go to court with a get without a ketubah and demand a ketubah because the assumption is that the husband gave her a ketubah, right? And even if he didn't give her a ketubah, the court can demand he give her a ketubah. So if she comes to court and just has a get, then she can demand her ketubah. How did they do? What's the conclusion of the Gemara in the end? What do you do if you didn't get to yesterday's daf? What do? You rip the get after you pay it. Okay, I was thinking it's like when you go into a movie theater and they rip your ticket, right? Because in the end they said, but you still need proof that you're divorced. Like, what if she wants to get remarried? If her get is ripped, it's no good. So they write on the back that it's ripped because she got paid back or something along those lines. Okay? So you have to wonder why they didn't just write it and they had to rip the get, right? That's a good question. Maybe they're worried that the writing would rub out or something. I don't know. You know, like, then you don't need to really rip it. But anyway, maybe you're, like, it's the same thing with the movie theater. You rip it because then no one can trick you after that. Once it's ripped, and then can't do anything. So anyway, so if the get, if you have a date, okay, remember, the couple got married, okay? So, you know, the wedding, right? Then they get divorced down the road, then they get remarried, okay, and then he dies. So, she comes to court with the death certificate, the divorce document, and a ketubah. So the question is, what's the date of the ketubah? If the date of the ketubah was after the divorce, then it's obviously on the second marriage, okay? Which means that based on her divorce document alone, she could demand a ketubah from the first marriage, okay? But if the ketubah is kodemet leget, then she can only demand one ketubah because the assumption is that that first ketubah rolled over to the second marriage, okay? Because that's generally what happens. In this case, you have to say, well, the guy obviously wrote her a new ketubah. If he wrote her a new ketubah, right, then the assumption is that what? That he wrote her a new ketubah in addition to the first ketubah, and we're not worried that she already demanded her first ketubah because she has a divorce document and it's not torn. Right? If it were torn, then we'd know that he didn't take it. Oh, that she didn't collect it yet. Okay. New Mishnah. Katan shisiyo aviv ketubata kayemet shamanat ken kima. A katan that his father marries him off. What's the story with that? The marriage is only derabanan. Mm-hmm. So now they had a ketubah only midirabanan. And now, right, when he eventually becomes married midoraita, when he gets older, what's the status of his ketubah? Is his ketubah good or not? So what do they say? The ketubah is kayemet, shamanat ken kima. Because he basically, when he becomes married, mita oraita, this is like we saw all these cases before of other things, right? Does it roll over? Does the bia, does that count as your bia? So here we're talking about the ketubah, that basically the assumption is that the ketubah rolls over also. In other words, it was a ketubah based on a derabana marriage, but now it's a ketubah based on a doraita marriage. Here's another case, which is a little more complicated. Gershin itgaira ishto imo, ketubata kayemet, almanakin kima. Okay, this is a very interesting concept, that when they were married, when they were non-Jewish, they also had a financial document, okay? What does it show you? That people, right, that other cultures were doing the same thing, basically. And that document basically can continue to survive even if, right, you now become Jewish, and you weren't Jewish when you wrote it, which is very interesting. Now, the Mepharshim really talk about that in both these cases, your first shtar is really not, it's really no good. It's not a good shtar. It's just that now there's an assumption that you re-establish the shtar as being valid. There was like a re-establishment, and the shtar is now good from now. And I think, if I remember correctly, there's a discussion about that you can't really demand it from the Chasim Eshu Abadim from way back when, because that shtar is really no good. It's just that when you became Jewish, or when you became a Gadol, then you basically reaffirmed that shtar and recreated it almost. Okay, even though you don't actually have a new shtar to show for it. Okay? One second. Right, it doesn't have any tokef, but what do they say that... Right, the assumption is that he continues to live with her on the assumption that he's committing to that same financial agreement he committed to earlier. Okay, but it would obviously only be takef from now, really. Okay? There's all sorts of questions on this. The Tosfot says... Right. Let's go one more minute, because then we'll see after. There's some problems here in the Gemara. Am Rav Huna, lo shanu ela mana matayim, aval tosefet ema. Okay, Rav Huna says it only applies to the mana matayim, okay, which is a huge question, because what? Anyone gets mana matayim.
Right.
Okay? Because even if you don't have a ketubah, you get mana matayim. So what's the Mishnah Mechadesh according to this? So Tosfot says that with the Mishnah Mechadesh, is that when you married her, what was the sum of the ketubah? She was a betulah, right? Assuming she was a betulah. Now, there's a bit of a problem here, because of Giyorah, we always assume if she was older than three. Okay, let's put that aside right now. And there's a lot of questions here. That's what I want to just point out. So he basically says that the point is that, let's say, if she, then she was a betulah, and now she's no longer a betulah when you... Right, so you go back and you count her as a betulah, and you get the matayim. Okay? If you hold it, there's no tosefet. Okay? We're going to see the other opinion, though. Rav Yehuda amar afilu tosefet yeshla. Okay? She does get the tosefet ketubah. Okay? If he promised her, a lot of money, then she gets that lot of money. The assumption is he wanted to continue it when he became a gadol, or when he became Jewish. Meitive. But now we have a question on Rav Yehuda. The Brita says, chidshu, if he was machadesh something when they got married, when they became Jewish... We'll take that example. Or when he became a gadol, no telat mashu chidshu. So what do you assume here? Only if chidshu in, lo chidshu lo. And they assume here right now that means that she doesn't get the tosefet. In other words, only if it was mechanish something does she get me'al me'ever to the matayim or the mana. But so then they say, no. Ema, you could read it like this. Af mashu chidshu. Even mashu chidshu in addition to the tosefet, right? The chidshu doesn't necessarily have to do with the tosefet. But then they say, but I have a better question. Bahalo Tanihachi, doesn't it say here like this in a Braita? Chidshu, no telet masha chidshu. Here's the important line now. Lo chidshu, but if he didn't add anything when they got, the second part of the marriage, bitula gova matayim v'almana maneh, which sounds like there's no tosefet. So now they say tshuvta to Rav Yehuda, it's a tshuvta to Rav Yehuda, right? So now they want to know if it's such a good question against Rav Yehuda. So what was Rav Yehuda thinking? So they say, Rav Yehuda matnitin at ite. The Mishnah, the Lashon of the Mishnah confused him. Okay? It threw him off, is a better way to say it, right? Why? Hu savar ktuba kayemet. When it says in our Mishnah, what does it say? Gershnit gayer and that, right? Ktubata kayemet. The ktuba is kayemet. What did he assume when it said ktuba kayemet? The whole thing, akula miltakai. Vilohi aikar ktuba kai. And they say, but he was mistaken. Because really the... Ketuba kayem, it means the ikar ketuba and not the tosefet.
But then when a katan gets married...
So there's no validity to a tosefet, you're saying. So there would be, if let's say he dies or divorces her before he becomes a gadol, I guess.
I see.
Right? I'm guessing. As you raise the question, I'm thinking about it. I think I would assume that was what it meant. Or you could say there really is no validity to a tosefet. But I'm assuming that it would be relevant in that case. if he were to die when there was still still a katan. Okay, Hachon al Kotev Ishto, starting a new parak, although the topic's very similar. Misha Hayana Soeshte Nashim. Actually, it's not exactly the same thing. This is different. This is now, we're moving into Dine Yerusha. Okay, what happens when the husband dies? We're going to have a bunch of cases now. If he had two wives, okay? But we'll see certain cases, okay? One dies, one the wife dies, and the second one the husband dies, okay? In other words, he gets married, she dies. He marries a second wife, and then he dies. Now, what's the relevance of all this? This is going to go back to something we learned earlier, and we're going to see it further on. Ketubah ben Indifrin. Do you remember that? There was a concern that the father, when he gives the nedunya to the when the couple gets married, the father of the bride is going to give a nedunya, and he's going to say, "I don't want to give too much money because chances are my wife will die first because of the women that died in childbirth." In which case, the ketubah, right? All the stuff goes into the ketubah. What happens to the ketubah? It goes to the yorshim. There is no ketubah for it, right? What do we say? The ketubah is always a right. It's this very weird thing because a ketubah, we always know, it only applies if he dies first or he divorces her. But if she dies first, the ketubah is basically dissolved. The husband inherits her ketubah. But what did we say? Yes, the husband inherits the ketubah, but when the husband dies, what's going to happen? In order to encourage the father of the bride to give a big amount to the nedunya and not think, oh, what a waste because it's going to be split up between all the sons of this guy and half of them, or how many of them aren't going to be my sons. Again, this is assuming there's polygamy, which we talked about wasn't 100% clear what was going on so much. But assuming there was some polygamy, or even actually not polygamy, if right, because exactly this case we're going to see. The wife dies, he remarries somebody else. And then he's got kids from right, previous marriages or future marriages. Or right, so it doesn't have to do that with that. Anyway, in order to encourage him, we say that the nedunya that he gave is going to go, right, the ketubah of the woman is going to be inherited by her children. So when so now we're going to get into somebody dies, right? We've talked about there's all sorts of people who want his money, right? There's balei chov, okay? Right? There's people who he owes money to. There's the ketubah, right? So in this case, we'll see. In one of the cases, we're going to see that you know the wife is still alive, the second wife, so she gets ketubah. And then there's this takanat chachamim of ketubah benin dichrin. Right, where the dichrin, by the way, dalet and zayin switch in Aramaic. So dichrin is zachar, zacharim. Okay, so ketubah benin dichrin. Also, they wanna the. Let's say they right. She they never got it basically because they only get it when the father dies. So now the father dies, and you got the ketubah of the second marriage, and you got the ketubah benin dichrin of the first marriage. So now. How does that work? So the first case isn't going to be this, but I wanted to just give you a hakama. The first case is Mishayana Soshte Nashim, Umate, and he dies and leaves two wives, still alive. Okay? Harishona Kodem Ashniya. The first one first collects her money, and then the second one. This is obviously talking about a case where there's not enough money to go around. Okay? Otherwise, it doesn't matter really who takes it first. V'yorshe Harishona Kodmim L'yorshe Ashniya. Okay? If both women die before they collect their money, so the yorshim of the first wife get before the yorshim of the second wife. Here's our case now. Nasa tarishona v'meta. Nasa shnia umetu. Okay, exactly what I said. First wife dies, right? Then her ketubah gets inherited by her husband. But then when the husband now dies, after he already has a second wife, right? Shnia v'yorsheha kodmim l'yorsheha rishona. Okay? So the second marriage in this case, the ketubah is a higher priority than the ketubah nin dichrin, which makes sense. Because ketubah nin dichrin is a takana chachamim, and the ketubah is not. Now, I want to remind you of one other halakha we learned about the ketubah nin dichrin, which we're going to see on the next step also, which is, that's really where it comes from, although we saw it earlier, that you can only collect ketubah nin dichrin since it's a takana chachamim. Okay, this is a very important point. Okay, ketubah nin dichrin is takana chachamim. Now, when someone dies, you have a chiyuv, right, there's a din Torah of Yerusha, right? Midoraita. The banim should be yorshim the money, right? The father's money. So if there's only enough money for ketubah benin dichrin, forget about our case, just a regular case, there's ketubah benin dichrin, there's only enough money for that and not for anything else. We don't, right? You need to have what we learned before, a motar dinar. Do you remember this? You need to have at least a dinar's worth of money, which is a decent amount of money, at least a dinar's amount of money to split between all the yorshim before you can collect the tshuva nidichim, because you can't allow a takarach chamim to over, to cancel out, okay, the din of Yerusha Midoraita. So there has to be a dinar for splitting before. Now, what if there's a dinar for splitting? I just want to give you haftamah before we get into all the stuff in the Gemara. If there's a motar dinar, okay, but you have to pay all of that to a Baal Chov, okay, and then you're left with just an Eper Ketubin in Dichrin, we're going to see that already Din Yerusha happened, and then what happens right away after your Yoresh? Well, you have the estate, and now you have to start paying all the bills. Now, if you're left with nothing because you paid all the bills, and then you've paid this Ketubin in Dichrin, and you have zero at this point, or less than a dinar, that's okay. Because there was a chalut, you know, there was a moment where you all had the money equally, and then you all paid your equal share into this Baal Chov. So now the question is going to be, is it going to be the same? Is a ketubah like a Baal Chov? Paying out the ketubah of the second sons, of the second wife's children, is that going to be the same as a Baal Chov? In which case we could say there was a Yerusha. We pay this, then we pay the two million different, and we're left with less than a dinar, and that works. So that's going to come up. I wanted to just preface it so it'll be easier to see when we get there. Okay, so the first thing they're saying, midekatani harishona kodemet lashnia. Velo katani harishona yeshla, vashnia einla. Okay, well, like I said, I introduced that, but we're going to go back to something else first, and then we're going to get to that. The Mishnah says, harishona kodemet lashnia, right? But it doesn't say, the rishona yeshla, vashnia einla, right? This is a case where he has just regular two wives, okay? And the first one gets before the second one. But it doesn't say that the first one gets and the second one doesn't get. So what would you assume here? Because of the Rishonah Kodem and the Shnia, what does it sound like? It sounds like L'chatchila, that's what should happen. But B'di'eved, which would be what? Michlal di'ikad mashnia v'tafsa. If the second one came and just grabbed her money, right, the second wife or the second kid's Yorshim, lo mafkina mina. Okay? You would assume that if she's already toe-faced it, we don't take it out of her hands. Now, first of all, again, there's a whole bunch of questions here. We learned that there's no such din of tofes when it comes to karka. And generally, where does she get the ketuba from? Karka. So they say the tofes here, again, there's different answers to this. One answer is to say the tofes doesn't necessarily mean she grabbed the land. It means she went to Beit Din to demand her ketuba, and the Beit Din had no idea that there was another wife that came before her. So she demanded her ketuba, the Beit Din gave it to her, and then it turns out that there was another wife who really should have had precedence. So that would be the case of Tofsin here. Again, it's not, there's different answers, but that seems to be a good standard answer. So now, that's the assumption right now. Shma Mina. Shma Mina, so learn from here now, the Baal Chov Mu'uchar, Shekadam V'Gava, Masha Gava Gava. So we will learn from here, and we're going to see this machloka further on Sadi Dalet. Anyway, we'll mention it here right now, which is, if there's a Baal Chov, a later Baal Chov, that came to take his money, right? So Masha Gava Gava. If he did, right, again, Baal Chov, same thing. If you're owed money earlier, you get precedence. But if the later guy took the money, then it should work. So then they say, no. Lo olam, emelecha, Masha Gava, lo gava. No, you don't have to say that this necessarily implies that opinion. You could say that it also is Masha Gava, lo gava, umay kodemet, legamre katane. Ben kodem lebat. Okay, what does it mean? It means you come before no matter what. Okay, in which case, if the second one were to be toe-faced, we take it out of our hands. And as you don't, just because it says kodemet, like it says elsewhere in the Mishnah, the son comes before the daughter in Dene Yerusha, which means that if the daughter were to grab the money, she doesn't get it. The court takes it out of her hands. So just because he uses the lashon, this kadam lezed, doesn't mean it means lechatchila yes b'dieved no. It means across the board lechatchila and b'dieved. Okay. So therefore, you don't have to necessarily say this. Now we're going to have the exact flip reading of the sugya. We're going to first think one and then go to the other. So they started out in this reading thinking that if the second one were to be tofes, it would be good, and in the end they conclude not necessarily. Ikadamre. Midalo katane im kadmashniya v'tafsa emotzi miyada. Michlal di kadmashniya v'tafsa mafkina mina. Since it doesn't explicitly tell us if the second one were to grab it, we don't take it out of our hands. seems to imply that if the second one were to grab it, we do take it out of our hands. It's all a matter of what they mentioned and didn't mention in the Mishnah, right? Shmamina balchov meuchar shekadam v'gava, mashagava lo gava. So now we conclude the opposite. That this must be our Mishnah holds on this side of the argument, which is that if a balchov, the second one, came and took, it's no good. Then they say, no, la'olam e'malcha mashagava gava. And I did it, Tane, so then why did it use the Lashon and it didn't say the words, im kadmashi avtafsa emotzi miyada? And that's for literary reasons. It wanted to balance the Mishnah. I did it, Tane, shniya v'yorshe akodmim liyorshe arishona. Tananami harishona kodemet l'shniya. Since it wanted to talk about the Yorshim being one before the other, it also says that the Rishona Kodem and the Shnia, but it's just kind of matching the Lashon, and it's not because it means Bidavka, and this, and only this case, and not, you know, and not if she grabs it and that. So anyway, either which way you read it, the Gemara is the Mishnah is inconclusive about what it holds about this Machloket, and what it would hold if the second one were to be Topis before the first, would it work or would it not work? Okay. Nasa et Rishona. Now we're going to get to what we were talking about before. We're going to talk about three different halachot here. Okay? So now again, this is the case where he marries someone, she dies. Then he marries a second woman, and then he dies. So now what happens? Shma mina tzlat. We can learn three halachot from this halacha in the Mishnah. Shma mina, because remember, what does the Mishnah say? The second one gets the ketubah first, right? And if... Now, right, what did it say? Let's be very careful about what the Mishnah itself said, right? Nasat Rishonah v'meita, Nasat Shniyah v'meitu, Shniyah v'yorsheh kodmim liyorsheh Rishonah. So the second ones get it before we give out the ketubah in indifferent. Okay. So now they're going to say, Shma mina, achat b'chayav, achat b'moto. That's what they're going to call this case, okay? We're going to see it a bunch of times. They call it achat b'chayav, right? One died in his lifetime, and achat b'moto, and one died after he died, right? Because we're talking about the Yorshim. Yesh lahen ketuba b'nin dichrin, v'lo cheshinan la'ansuye. You might have thought that if both wives are no longer alive, right? One died when he was still alive, and one died after his death, and now the Yorshim are arguing about the money, that we would say that we don't give a ketuba b'nin dichrin in this case. Why? Because you might have thought that it would cause a fight between the brothers. Because in the end, what's going to happen? The ketubah of the second wife, there's nothing to discuss. Because she should have inherited it already in her lifetime. She just didn't, she should have gotten it, right? She didn't get it, so we're just like a baal chov. But at that point now, all the father's Yerusha should be split up evenly. Because, you know, there's no wives left anymore. And they say, in this case, the ketubah in Dichrin was only a case where a husband leaves, let's say, two wives. That is, he dies, and both, both wives died in his lifetime. And then the brothers, they say, I want my share of the mother's ketubah, and I want my share of the mother's ketubah. And then everyone splits, you know, you get your share, and you get your share, because your grandfather left you that, and your grandfather left you that, and the nedunya. So everybody gets their share. But in a case where it's one-sided, and there's only one ketubah that has that stuff, right? Because the other ones, we got it from, they were just getting their mother's money, right? It's different. So in that case, we might say that it's going to cause a fight, and therefore it's not... We're not going to do it. So therefore they say, that's one halacha you're going to learn here, that yesh lahen ketubin indifferent, and we aren't worried about a fight, that it's one-sided. So now they say, mimai, where do we learn this from? Midikatane shniya b'yorsheh kodmim liyorsheh rishona. This is, by the way, going to be obvious already to you. But what does it say? First you give the second, and then you give the first. So what do you learn from here? Mikdam hu dekadme, right? That they, yes, the second ones get first priority, but if there's enough money, ha'ika, if there is enough money, shakle. Then, right, you see here that the first wife's children do get the tubin indifferent because the Mishnah says there's, if there's something for them to get, then they get it, right? That's the implied in the Mishnah. It doesn't actually say it, but it's implied. That's the first halacha we're learning. The second halacha is, ushmamina ktuba na'aseit motar lechaverta. That's what we were talking about here, the motar dinar. Okay? What does that mean? The collection of the ketubah is of the first wife, the second wife's ketubah, the one we're collecting first, is considered already that there was a chalut of the motar dinar. In other words, there was Yerusha. Then they had to pay off the ketubah. And now if they're left with not enough, right, then we're going to say that we give it to the ketubah indifferent and we don't worry that there has to be a motar dinar left. So now how do we see this? Mimai. Midilo katane, because it doesn't say in the Mishnah, im yesha motardina, right? It just says, it implies, right, if there's enough money left to go, then we can give them. It doesn't say, oh, and you have to make sure to leave over a motardina. Now you can make the argument otherwise, because you could say, well, it was obvious, right, that you need a motardina. But clearly, they don't think it was so obvious, and therefore they say this. Ushmamina ktuba benin dichrin lo tarfa mimishabdeh. What do you learn here? Ktupin and Dichrin can't take it from Nechasim Meshuabadim. How do you know? Okay, remember Nechasim Meshuabadim, right? From land he sold from the time they had their commitment. Why? Tisalkadatin Taframi Meshabde, what would happen? Okay, I don't know if you thought about this. If the first ones take their ktuba first, they now take it from land, right? They take their ktuba from land. And now the first wife's kids say, wait, but where owe the Ktupin and Dichrin? So what do they say? Well, you can't take it, right? Because they took and there's nothing left. What will they say? Well, let's take it from the Nechasim Meshuabadim, right? Clearly, their rights started predated the others, so they should be allowed to now take it out of the hands of those who have the ketubah. So, right? So they say, Leitu b'nei rishon, av litrafinu l'b'nei shniya, right? They should be able to take it from them. Okay. So now, Rav Ash is going to have a question on two parts of what, right? He said three things. Okay? So now he's going to question two of them. So we'll start one at a time. Matki flower of Ashi. Mimai. Dilma la'olam emalacha achat b'chaya ve'achat b'moto ein lahen ketuba b'nin dichrin. Maybe, right, even though, what did we say from the beginning? That we're not choshesh li'insuye, right? Because what do you see here? It said, shnia yorsheh kodmim li'yorsheh rishona, which means that the yorsheh rishona do get to get something, right? What do they get? Assumption is that we're talking about ketuba b'nin dichrin. So they say, who says, who's to say, you're talking about ketubin and dichrin. Umay kodmim lenachala. Maybe it means you start dividing up the Yerusha and they start getting the first portion of the Yerusha first. Maybe that's what it means. Lenachala katane. B'chitem v'yorsheh rishona lamali. And then, if that's the case, then why should it say yorsheh rishona? Because, wait, what's the question here? Right. Yorsheh rishona seems to imply what? That they're getting something particularly because they're the first wife's children. Mm-hmm. What would the first wife's children have? The ketubin and dichrin, right? So why would they call them the yorsheh rishona? It should just be, you know, the sons. So what are the answer? I did tana shniya v'yorsheh, tana nami l'yorsheh rishona. In other words, it's just matching the lashon, but it doesn't mean specifically because they're her children. Okay? Utka marta, so that's his first question. The second one is, utka marta ketuba naseh motar l'chaverta. Dilma lo lam emalacha ein ketuba naseh motar l'chaverta. Maybe we'd say it doesn't work that way. B'hacha hu de'ika motar dinar. In other words, this Mishnah is only talking about this, what I said before. It doesn't say it, but it's obvious that they only get the ketuba in different in the case where there's also motar dinar. Okay? In other words, this Mishnah is not focusing on that aspect, so it didn't repeat that aspect. You should know that. Okay? So now what do they say? Lo lam emalacha ein ketuba naseh motar l'chaverta. Right, and that, okay, that's what it, oh, sorry, I read that already. Okay. Okay, so that's the end of it. So now, according to this reading, right, why would it be logical to say the ketubah is a motar dinar? Because again, there's no real Yerusha. Like, all the money went to the second kids. Yeah, they're a Baal Chov, but they're not really a Baal Chov. They're different from a Baal Chov. They're in a different category. So the whole question is, do you view them, like, in the same category as a Baal Chov? And or do you say, no, it's sort of like the Yerusha went to them, right, that part of the Yerusha, but the other kids never really got anything, okay? It's also, if you think about it, it never really moved hands. Like in the case where there's a Baal Chov, so it moved hands. It went from the, you know, the sons, and they had to pay out someone else. Here there was no payout. There was no actual transaction. It just kind of stayed in their property. So you could make an argument to say it's different. Okay, so now we're going to go back to this issue of echat b'chayav ve'echat b'moto. They're going to say tanaihi. It's a machloket tanaim here. Okay, this thing we said about, you know, they said shmamina that there is ketubin in dichrin in this case, and then came Rav Ashi and said you can't necessarily prove that. They're going to say not only are these amoraim arguing about it, but also is a machloket tanaim. Ditanya, meitu echat b'chayav ve'echat b'moto. Okay, the first sons can say to the second, okay, they could say, right, your balechov, take your ktuba and go, and now we're going to take our stuff, right? 1 second. All right, we're arguing about this Motar Dinar thing. Sorry, that's what the issue is. They'll say, you take your property, and that's like the Dinei Yerusha, right? In other words, if they say, Tol Atem, go take your stuff, that's as if saying, this money all belongs to us, we're giving you your share, now we're going to take our share. And therefore, there was Dinei Yerusha from the Torah, and Ketubin Indifferent doesn't override that, right? Even if there's not a Motar Dinar left. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Kfar Kaftzana Chalami Lefnei B'nei Rishona, V'nafla Lebnei B'nei Ashniya. Right, that means if he dies, so right, the Ketubanin Dichrin, basically, the B'nei Ha'isha Rishonah say to the Shnia, you're Balei Chov. No, I'm sorry. Rabbi Kiva says, Kfar Kaftzan Nachalami Lefnei B'nei Rishonah. Right. The Ketubanin Dichrin is just going to be part of the Nachala. And everyone is going to split the rest b'shaveh. Now, they're going to take their Ketubah, and the rest is going to be split evenly, and there's no Ketubanin Dichrin. That's basically what he's saying. So now they're going to say, what's the basis of the Machaloka between them? My love, Bahaka Miflege, to Mar Savar, a chap of Hayab, a chap of Moto, a geshlem ktubin in Dichrin. Umar Savar, a chap of Hayab, a chap of Moto, a lam ktubin in Dichrin. In other words, maybe the machloka between them, the Rabbi Akiva says basically it's all going to be split up evenly after the second guys get their ktubah. Maybe Rabbi Akiva, the assumption is he disagrees with our Mishnah, right? This is going back to the first thing. Sorry, we're not up to the Motar Dinar yet. We're going to see. There's a whole bunch of different ways about understanding this machloka. So the first way to understand it is they disagree with the first Shema Amina. That the whole question is a Ketubah Benin Dichrit only applicable in a case where the husband dies and leaves over two sets of Yorshim. Okay? And, you know, and they each get their portion of the Nedunya that their mother got, right? Now, the mothers died during his lifetime. The Yorshim now, when the father dies, they get their mother's part of the two. Because remember, as long as the father's alive, he gets it all. He gets the Nedunya. Remember that. The Nechzitz on Barzal go to him, right? He gets the Ketubah. And only when, right? Imeta Yirashena, remember that? So he gets all the stuff. And then what do? We split, right, the Nedunya part between the sons equally so that it doesn't cause fighting between them. But in a case where it would cause fighting because it's not going to be even anymore, they don't have a Ketubin in Dichrin, then basically we're going to say that we're not going to do it. That's what Rabbi Akiva is basically saying. And they're saying he would basically be disagreeing with our Mishnah and disagreeing with Rav Ashi, the way Rav Ashi. He would agree with the way Rav Ashi understood it, right? In other words, first the Gemara said, Shema Mina, that you see there is Ketubin and Dichrin. In this case, Rav Ashi disagreed. Rabbi Kiva would match up to that, saying, we don't think there's Ketubin and Dichrin at all. Forget about Motar Dinar, right? You understand? At all. Ketubin and Dichrin was a specific halacha that was made when there's a bunch of Yorshim trying to get their mother's Nedunya, and then we just split, each one gets their own Nedunya, and that way, if one had a big Nedunya, they get more money, one had a smaller Nedunya, they get less money, and that won't cause ketata, but if one gets it, and the other one doesn't get it at all, then it would cause a ketata. Okay, so that's the first way they understand it. Amarava, Eshkachtinu l'Rabbanan de'Bei Rav, I saw the rabbis from the house of Rav, okay, de'yatve v'ka'amre, they were sitting and saying, they think that everybody agrees. This Machloket Tanaim doesn't have to do with that issue. Everybody agrees there is Ketubin and Dichrin. We're not worried about a Ketata. They get it anyway. That's their Machloket. And it would be the same for Baal Chov. Okay? That's what their Machloket is about. Mar Savar Ketubah Naseit Motar L'Chaverta V'Hu Adin L'Baal Echov. I was saying maybe you want to distinguish Baal Echov and Ketubah. They're saying no. Everyone agrees that Baal Chov and Ketubah, all that stuff, either counts for a Motar Dinar or doesn't count for a Motar Dinar. And you assume there was a Chalut and then they had to pay out everybody. In which case, at that point, when there's only enough left for Ketubah and Dichrin, they can collect it. Umar Savar Ein Ketubah Naseit Motar L'Chaverta V'Hu Adin L'Baal Chov. Okay, but what's in the Baal Chov? And it would be the same. Okay? V'amina lehu'ana, And I said to them, "Bebalchov." But okay, that's what he heard the rabbis in the house of Rav saying. But he himself, Rabbi, said, "Wait a minute, Bebalchov kul amalu pligi dehavei motar." He says, "Wait, I want to distinguish between a balchov and a ketuba." Okay? They claim that the Machloket Tanaim was about a ketuba, but would also apply to balchov. Because remember, the Machloket Tanaim was about the ketuba. He said it would be the same, they said it would be the same for balchov. And he said, "I disagree with you. I agree with you that maybe the Machloket is about whether the motar works, whether you can say there was a chalut before, and then we can collect the ketuba in a different, even if you don't have a motar dinar. But it only works if you're talking about a ketuba that's being collected, that there's a machloket about it. But if it's a baal chov, you wouldn't say that." Okay, so here, Umar Savar Ketuba Nase Bamilu Ana BeBaal Chov Kule Amalo Pligi DeHavei Motar. Everyone agrees when it comes to a baal chov that is motar, because like what I said earlier, right? The baal chov. This is why I gave you all the background before, so you'd understand when we get here. The baal chov wants to, right? It's as if you all inherit it, and now you have to pay all your debts. But he pligi b'ketuba. But the question is when it's a ketuba, because then there's really no collection, there's no giving out, there's no, right? It just sort of stays in their hands. So that's what he thinks the machloket is. But matkif la Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef says, "Wait, no. Ihachi Rabbi Akiva omer kfar kaftzana chala. Im yesh motur dinam rabayale." Notice that in the machloket of Tanaim, of Rabbi Akiva and Tanakama, it doesn't say anywhere anything about a motur dinar. Right? He just says, kvar kaftzana chala, but he doesn't say, im yesh motar dinar, right? It should have been mentioned explicitly. It doesn't make any sense it wasn't mentioned explicitly. Okay, we're going to stop here for today. Tomorrow we're going to see Rav Yosef's understanding. So we saw so far two understandings of this machloket tanaim. Okay, we'll get it straight so that when we get to the next one, we'll already have this clear. The two understandings are either they're arguing about, is there at all a din of ketuba and indifferent in this kind of case where there's imbalance? Or is a ketuba and indifferent just in the case where both wives died, or three wives died, or however many wives died, during the lifetime of the husband? Or do we say, no, everyone agrees that there is ketuba and indifferent. The question is only, what if there isn't a motar? Do you say that since the first kids inherited the ketuba first, that was like a baal chov, and therefore, right? Or do you say, no, it wasn't? Right? And therefore, or do you even go to say, like the Talmidim of Rav, that even a baal chov wouldn't count as a motar dinar case? Not a baal chov, not a ketuba, right? According to one opinion, that you need, in addition to all the baalei chov and the ketuba and everything, right? You still need a motar dinar to be able to collect your ketuba in different. Okay? So there's two basic trains of thought, but within one, there's sort of a pitzul, certainly, about how you treat the baalei chov. Okay. That's it for today.